Voices of VR podcast. Hello, my name is Kent Bai, and welcome to the Voices of VR podcast. It's a podcast that looks at the structures and forms of immersive storytelling and the future of spatial computing. You can support the podcast at patreon.com/voicesofvr. So continuing my series of looking at different experiences at IFA DocLab 2025, today's episode we'll be covering a piece called Another Place, which is a part of the Spotlight program. So this is an immersive experience where you're kind of walking through the streets of Paris, see all these kind of shadowy characters, and so you're kind of gaining the sense of these are people from the main protagonist's past. It's a transgender character from Thailand, and so she's walking down the street, and you see some more, you know, at the beginning, a documentary footage of her, and there's ways that she said something on social media, and she basically gets exiled. And so she's in France, but kind of remembering her previous life as she was in Thailand. And so there's certain moments as you're walking through the streets of Paris that you kind of go down these alleyways. And eventually you kind of get into this more like flying dream logic thing where you kind of go back and span space and time, and that you are able to kind of go back into the memories of this main protagonist character, where she's able to go back home and revisit her home and all of her cats that she had to quickly abandon. And so, yeah, it's kind of a very spatial, world-building, architecturally designed piece by Domenico. We'll be kind of talking around his process as he's designing this piece called Another Place. So we'll be covering all that and more on today's episode of the Voices VR podcast. So this interview with Domenico happened on Saturday, November 15th, 2025, at IFA DocLab in Amsterdam, Netherlands. So with that, let's go ahead and dive right in.
So I'm Domenico Singapedrolli. I'm a filmmaker and artist from Switzerland, but also from Thailand and Italy. I'm currently living in Paris, and I'm here at IFA, at IFA DocLab, to present as a Dutch premiere the work, the immersive work, Another Place.
Great, and maybe you could give a bit more context as to your background and your journey into the space.
Yeah, so actually I can confidently say that it was a kind of a long journey, because I studied actually architecture, just the bachelor, and then after 4 years of study I realized that I was more interested in moving images, and since that moment I thought that, okay, maybe to explore this kind of side I should go to Thailand, because, you know, there is a more energetic and environment to create, especially like when you're right at the beginning without much of the financing. So that's basically what I did. I moved to Bangkok in 2019, and since then I, you know, being loyal to the process, pick your camera and shoot until I build up a sort of portfolio of works. And afterwards, in 2022, I applied to this school in northern France called Le Frénois, which is basically like a new media and also audiovisual postgraduate institute that basically financed two projects. And one of the kind of assignment they had in the second year was to use new technology. And that's where I chose to make a VR project, because that was 2023 and, you know, there was a lot of talk around it. You know, Meta announced the year before like this kind of metaverse, and so it was really, for me it was very important to kind of be attentive to the discourse and to participate and to understand how it is done.
Yeah, it's interesting to hear your own journey and how it's going between the geographic places of France and Paris and Thailand, because in your piece you're also kind of exploring those themes kind of being fused together in a certain way. Can you elaborate a little bit more on your relationship to both France, Paris, and Thailand? And, you know, what was it around these places that you wanted to also feature them within your work?
Yeah, so, I mean, that's a very good question, because I think that's one of, let's say, one of the keys of understanding, let's say, my artistic language. Because, again, growing up both in Switzerland and in Thailand, like, less like throughout the summers it would be back and forth, like for me it was always I'm kind of wired to always see multiple sides of the same things. And when I start to make movies or be more engaged with storytelling, for me, like, I was interested in character that were embodying kind of more geographies, more more places and, you know, this kind of also movement between places. So in France, I got in touch, I became close with the community of Thai political refugee, which it's kind of a, let's say, a big hotspot there, because they have a good, let's say, immigration policy and exile program. And so I made two projects. One project is called Au revoir Siam, Goodbye Siam, which is, again, like a multidisciplinary project that follows the whole community, but especially one, as, again, we go back to his hometown and we kind of explore his how basically he has been forgotten, because he has been in France for so many years that people in his hometown that are now old, like, forget him. And but in this case, with another place, was a younger character, a transsexual political refugee of around my age. I think when we did it, she was 28, so very young, but already going through something very powerful and strong and life-wrecking. And yeah, basically the whole project is basically this roaming around these spaces, this desolated Paris that is kind of devoid of her memories, but suddenly get filled up with all these kind of fragments that kind of are regurgitated from Thailand, and little by little we kind of reach there, and we kind of get to the point where we enter into her room, in which, again, it's really like her bedroom that we kind of reconstructed through images to kind of, yeah, make it.
Yeah, it's interesting to think around the grammar of film and cinema, and how, like, it has different editing techniques, and that a lot of this film is like a single take of sorts, where you're going through a lot of spaces, some of them liminal spaces because they're more like passageways to get to something else, but these dark alleyways, but you're basically taking us on this spatial journey. So having a background in architecture made a lot of sense to me when you said that, because I could really see a focus of the space and the environment as a key part of the experience. And so there's a lot of environmental storytelling in that sense of just the spaces, but also narrative parts that are also tied in there. But just curious to hear a little bit more around, you know, your transition from, you know, studying as architecture, but wanting to create more moving images. And I felt that this piece was really like using the medium of VR to kind of take me on this spatial journey that wouldn't really be possible in any other medium. So just curious to hear a little bit more around this kind of developing of that grammar that you wanted to use in this piece.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think, like, there are many kind of architectural works. For me, I also detach myself from architecture because I like, let's say an image of a building that an architect would kind of show you to you would be always like a building once it's kind of hyper polished, new, without any kind of none of the texture of the daily life. Me, since I was a student, I always wanted to see the texture, the chairs that is not that it's a bit broken, and, you know, these kind of layers of life on top of it. So, again, the space, I mean, it's again, I mean, it's our wall, windows, but again, it's also the political value of the space and how it kind of, and the memories behind space. So again, and these elements are more intangible, let's say. They're less, let's say, visual, but they kind of part of creating this kind of experience of motion, of because also, like, we forget sometimes that also architecture themselves, like, that architecture is also movement, and that's a kind of a key quality of cinema, like, it's movement sometimes through the edit, but also especially in this case, which is a long take, like, we really live through the space in motion. So, and eventually, like, this film was I mean, because I think the storytelling is very mental, that basically, like, what we see, it's mostly spaces, but I think it becomes actually more than that, because which is very difficult actually to translate in still images. Like, I think still images can a person might kind of confuse them as like architectural rendering, but I think because it's very difficult to convey the voice of the character, her emotion, and her kind of a sense of loss, which is built in the work through time, through like all this kind of miscommunication, lack of feedbacks of the character, the shadows, and so on.
Yeah, I'm wondering if you could elaborate on this transgender character that's being featured. We're seeing some of her images of her home, her cats, and we see images of her at the very beginning, and then you kind of embody her in a way. So you're walking around as this character from the first person perspective, and so just curious to hear a little bit more around the development of this character and how you came around this kind of asylum seeking context of being in exile and trying to find comfort or home or like even shelter. There's kind of a wandering that's happening. So, but just curious to hear a little bit more around the this kind of development of the character you're cinematically representing, but also if it's, you know, based upon like an sounds like it's based upon like an actual character that just the process of how you developed the journey and the story that you're featuring here.
Oh no, actually, like this is a completely real character. So it's basically René, that it's also like I use her real name, and basically, I mean, it was very delicate, but also very, let's say, the most challenging, let's say, part of the process was really kind of developing the storytelling along with her kind of testimony, along with getting to know her, because I got to know her like some months, like a year before, when I was shooting this documentary about political refugees. So I interview many, all the members of the community, let's say, or those who were kind of more at ease with it. And I also interview her, but at the end, like, I didn't manage to put it in the final cut of the previous work because I felt that her personality was too ambivalent and it would kind of break also the expectation of the other work. I knew that I needed a special treatment with this personality, with this person, and I thought that, okay, because I'm doing a VR experience, and a VR experience in any kind of most reduced term, so a single player VR experience, I said, okay, maybe, you know, the project could mostly be like this embodiment, no, of her. And so that's why in the film at the beginning there is basically, I wouldn't say, there is this basically transition from the language, from the cinematic language, because we are seeing her being interviewed on a screen, suspended in the space, in the building. And then slowly we are becoming like, okay, we are hearing the voice and, you know, we are understanding that this is the language of VR, of video game, of being in first person and, you know, reacting to environment as such. So once this kind of point of view was established, was really about, okay, how do I get the audience really feel like to convey like all the kind of ambivalent emotion that kind of struck me. So it's, for example, like she would always talk very easily about her exile, like, okay, I've been exiled because I criticized the monarchy, and that's it. And I, if I were asking her, like, are you sad about it? Do you miss home? And she would go, not really. Like, she was not giving me like those dramatic response. Like, she never cried in front of me because of her sadness. But again, like, we know that it must be incredibly sad and displacing to not be able to go home anymore. And so, from all our like various conversation, like it, I really tried to build the narrative around it. So, for example, the presence, when she really told me that what she misses the most are the cats, that really became like an important, like the key element in the storytelling. That say, okay, like, you know, I would like, if she told me that she would be missing her family, I will try to maybe find a way to, so that the whole journey bring her to her family or her friends. But no, she said the cats, so I have to find a way to kind of to build the dramaturgy in order that the cat give this kind of feeling of home of coziness and fulfillment.
Yeah, and as she's walking through the city, there's this mechanic where she's holding a phone that serves as a way of also telling a part of the story as it unfolds. But, you know, the light is on the phone, so that as the light is shining, you actually at some point realize that there's these kind of shadow characters that are recurrent throughout the piece, where there'll be a bench that's on the street, but then when you shine your light on the phone, the virtual phone that's in your kind of NVR, then you get revealed this kind of silhouette of this character. And so it gives a sense of like this kind of shadowy memory characters, or maybe you could just describe what you were trying to create with these kind of shadow characters that are featured throughout this piece.
Yeah, so I mean, these shadows are kind of it's what let's say these are the human presence, let's say, in the work, which are some of the least human we can imagine, because again they're in between silhouettes and like projected shadows, so sometimes they're very distorted to the point that we can hardly recognize them. But I mean, now I will go to a more technical term. Like, throughout all this shadow, we also put to each of them like a sound source. So each one would kind of communicate a certain gesture, a certain presence. So there's a person maybe crying a little bit afar, another one sleeping, another one listening to the music. So for me, this was, in a way, like also metaphorically speaking, about the experience, like the urban experience of like those who are outsiders, or those who, again, like the spirits that inhabit like urban environment that we are not noticing. And for me, it's like because in her position of being displaced, of being, let's say, a wandering spirit by its own, she would be able to access to these kind of shadows. But also, like, talking about the shadow is kind of open up like to a kind of a, let's say, wider and more spiritual framework of the work, because actually the conception was not exactly like taking her story and making it into a VR piece, but it was, okay, I want to create an afterlife journey. I want that the VR becomes this, because one of the few experiences that I watched that really struck me was this work by a Thai filmmaker, A Conversation with the Sun, by a Pichapong Varasetakul. It's a very complex 30 people like VR multiplayer experience, almost performative. And so this aspect of the journey, afterlife journey, was very important. So I imagined that, okay, in the afterlife journey, in all kind of writing, like Christian writing, Buddhist writing, there are always like others in form of spirits. So maybe there was a kind of a, let's say, a fragment or a debris of this this beginning idea.
Yeah, and so what's the name of the character, or the name of your the person you're featuring?
Yeah, René.
René, or yeah. So the main character, Renee, as she's walking through the city, you get this sense, you get little bits of her backstory where she's seeking asylum, she's been denied. So, and she made a comment on Facebook about the government, and she basically got exiled. So she made some post around the monarchy, was critical of the monarchy, and gets basically kicked out of the country. So she's in this kind of in-between liminal space of exile and not really having a place to be or a home, in this being a stranger in a strange land. And so she is on these, she's got a phone, but she doesn't have internet service. And so she's kind of like looking for these hotspots. And so as she's walking through, she's, you know, wanting to do certain things and blocked. But then eventually when she does get connectivity, then she's on Grindr trying to find hookups, but unclear as to whether or not she actually just needs a place to stay over the night, or if she's looking for a deeper connection or wanting to find some sort of connectivity. So you get this sense of, like, as you're walking through the space, you get these intermittent notifications on the phone that are also pushing the story forward, which I thought worked really quite well in the way that, you know, we spend so much of our time on the phone, and that there's kind of a portals into other aspects of the deeper story that may be difficult to otherwise really portray. So I'm just curious to hear a little bit more around this development of the use of the phone throughout the course of the piece to be able to be a delivery mechanism of parts of the story.
Yeah. So again, I will kind of try to go back to the beginning. And again, because I approached, let's say, this VR project in a very, let's say, theoretical way, or to try to break down the medium, one of the elements like that was kind of that I thought it was very specific to the medium that cinema, for example, doesn't have is the interactivity, no? So once we kind of, me and my small team decided to have interaction, we said, okay, what kind of interaction? And to kind of be in line again with my cinematic background, I wanted, okay, we keep it simple and maybe there is just a light, no? We are kind of illuminating the environment. And again, it's a very simple interaction, but can be very satisfying or interesting. So we tried, okay, maybe like a candlelight or maybe just a more abstract, let's say, almost like a firefly. So we are this, we can move this kind of a golden bulb. And at some moment, like, there was say, why don't we use just a phone? Why using a candle that is, you know, people have been using it like 200 years ago. Now when you need to light your way, 90% of the time you will use your phone, no? But that was kind of also challenging for me because it would kind of add this kind of a very apparently uncinematic element, like the screen of a phone. And was like, okay, I mean, are we sure it's not gonna be too distracting because all the environment is very dark and moody, and suddenly like you have Google Maps that, okay, maybe it kind of breaks too much the attention. But starting from there, we try to kind of add this element it really became a storytelling, like the, I think, like a very important storytelling element to kind of get more into, to make action happen, because again the environment would by itself not have too many action, no? So we needed something more punctual that would kind of pop up, but at the same time it kind of open up to a series of let's say feelings that I recognize that everybody has, like, you know, this fear of not being connected to the internet or like losing yourself in a city and you don't know where you're going. So, and all this kind of this adds up to this kind of displacing experience. And also because, I mean, this is more in terms of writing, but also in terms of content, like about the character, again, it's, I realized that all her life kind of was built around her communication through the smartphone. So, you know, maybe she would kind of, you know, all her emails or her connection with the family back home was run to this screen. So I said also this device is part of her life, let's say.
Yeah, there's a piece that was here at IFA Doc Lab a number of years ago by Ali Elsami. He's an Iranian virtual reality and immersive artist, and he had a piece called Nerd Funk. And in that piece, he is featuring a phone that you're holding in your hand and that you are kind of both watching other videos but also taking pictures. And so it gives you – for me, it was this moment of like – realizing how much that we have our own expectations of what it means to work, to look at our phones and smartphones and use them. Like for most of us, we're carry them around with us all the time. And so it feels very natural to kind of start to use the affordances of that within VR, but to also add it in a way that gives us this experience of being disconnected and not having any connectivity. But then also this hope for connection and romantic or other feelings of partnership or home. And then at some point, the battery runs out. And so then now you're kind of cut off. And then you kind of use that as an opportunity to kind of enter into another altered state where there's a turn in the piece that allows you to kind of go in this otherworldly space that, so I'm just curious to hear any reflections on the use of the way that we use our phones and technology in a way that can create even a deeper immersion throughout the piece, and then how at a certain point it kind of marks a turning point in a narrative once the phone dies.
Yeah, I mean, let me... So, well, I mean, I already answered you about the use, but we can go back into the detail again of the phone again. But in this case, so I think the work, it's really clearly divided in two parts. So the first part is in, let's say, in Paris and then in Thailand. But of course, between the two, there is this kind of intermediate space, which is a sort of corridors and staircase. And when we were kind of doing the level design, I really imagine that it becomes like a very labyrinthic and a moment that it kind of, you lose your sense of orientation. It's actually the part where when you're watching the art, that's where you turn the most. And for me, it was also this way that, you know, as she, and you feel the audience understand that she's going to Thailand because, for example, it becomes... She's smelling something, it's getting warm, like this is all communicated through her voice. And so she doesn't, in a way, at that point I thought that, okay, maybe she doesn't need the phone anymore because she's really going back. But at the same time, like, the shift goes on, and that it's not only like she's kind of freed from this device, but... you know, she's also freed from her body because as soon as we arrived in Thailand, we are a wandering spirit, no? So we are flying high and we are kind of navigating through this place that, again, she cannot access, but now in another kind of a state, she can roam through.
Yeah, I really like this threshold that you'd created to, you know, both... transition from Paris into the corridors, and then we're kind of in this liminal space, and then at some point as she's walking up the stairs, the top of the stairs is a window, and she just goes out that window, and then all of a sudden we're transported into Thailand, and you know, we kind of realize that at some point. It's unclear initially, because as I'm walking through, I'm like, okay, I'm maybe still in Paris, but then, you know, okay, now we're clearly in another location. But it served as a, I guess, that threshold space, from speaking from architecture. It's like, I don't ever remember a space where at the top of the stairs is a window that's open when you, and then you jump out the window, or you go out the window, and then you're just kind of floating. And so it's clearly in this kind of like, we're in another logic, a dream logic of sorts. It feels like, okay, now I'm in a dream, but it was kind of a seamless transition into this dream logic realm. But it was like, the key was, okay, well, there's a staircase that's leading outside of the window, now we're flying. And so just curious to hear this kind of like a grammar shift that happens with the space that you designed to make this threshold transition from one state to the next.
Yeah, well, actually this kind of moment of passing through the window, and we pass through, like, we clip it in using like a video game jargon, so we, because we really pass through, let's say, the assets. And actually, like, the reference dates back to, I think, one of my favorite films. I don't know the date. It's probably, like, in the late 70s or beginning of the 80s. Like, it's called The Passenger by this Italian filmmaker called Michelangelo Antonioni. And this film, like, it's a very mysterious film about almost metaphysical, because there is a... the main character, which is played by Jack Nicholson, kind of decide to kind of ditch his own identity to kind of escape. He's a journalist and he just escapes. And as the film unfolds, like he's being followed by like his families and the police and, you know, other people. Anyway, in this kind of penultimate shot, which the film is very known for, it's this very long take in which... I'm sorry to spoil you the film, but basically we transition from, let's say, the living character to the dead characters. And this kind of 8 minutes long take, we pass through the window. And this moment of passing through the window with the camera, which, again, technically-wise was very complex because there are pictures of the shooting of the scene in which it, they really had to, there was a mechanism that opened up the, let's say, the grid of the window in order to make the camera pass and to be attached on a crane to have this, to create this kind of floating effect. So again, like for me, that shot, it kind of encapsulated this kind of early idea of a spiritual journey, starting from a very physical, from a very physical world to a very ethereal, suspended world. So that's why I think that in the process, like in the narration of the work, in the architecture, that kind of that moment offered the right spot to kind of convey all these ideas and reference.
Yeah, and once we start to enter into this more dreamscape, we're flying through the air, and there's these like glowing red orbs on these cars. There's the scenes that were very evocative, because I was like, okay, what's the context here? What's the situation, or what's this mean? And at this point, I don't know where I'm at, and I think it wasn't until the end where I got to her home where I'm like, okay, now we're firmly in Thailand, and so there was a transition there, but like at certain moments, I don't know when I realized, like when we were firmly there, I just felt like we're in this dream logic, liminal space that's in between one state to the next. But maybe just elaborate on some of the kind of more evocative or beguiling type of imagery that you wanted to have that seemed to have maybe some symbolism, or maybe it was just trying to evoke other feelings of emotions of mystery. Yeah, just curious if you can maybe elaborate on it.
Yeah, no, so once we get to this Thai streets, which is kind of, we try to recreate the streets in where she was living. I would also kind of in a, let's say, less rigorous way, I try also to recreate, let's say, the fact that when she was forced to flee the country, like some days before, like police came to her apartment to confiscate all the kind of... all the things that she used, like smartphone, computers that she used to write these social media posts. Like, this is kind of a standard procedure. And so this kind of red light, which is kind of, again, aesthetically very powerful, but also, again, politically very concrete, were kind of a... It was also like a way to kind of state that in any case... she goes back either as a ghost or as a real person, like police will always be there waiting, no? But because she's flying, she doesn't have to get into the trouble, but she kind of hear the conversation, the fact that she's still being searched. And for me, like having this kind of menacing presence was also, I think it narratively wise, it would kind of enhance this kind of this complexity of a journey home, because okay, it's in a way like it's still like inconceivable because it's impossible. So even in her imagination, like she cannot allow herself too much, you know. And so that's why also when we get into her bedroom, which is a kind of the most tender moment and the moment where in a way she gets emotional to kind of reconnect with this kind of her domestic animals, we still have the light of the police cars, which was kind of foreshadowed before, that it's kind of still stating that, you know, there's something menacing, there's something unresolved, and her condition is still, in a way, precarious, and she's still fragilized. And
Okay, so yeah, those are the police cars that... would be waiting for her. So just to clarify a little bit of her journey and story out of Thailand into France, when we re-enter into her apartment, her home, she says, oh, it's amazing that I've gotten into this trouble by posting this Facebook post critiquing the monarchy. So did she actually get arrested, or did she, you know, or did she leave before anything happened, because she knew that if she stayed around, then she would be going to prison?
Yeah, so from the moment she wrote the Facebook post, which was, I think, Now I don't remember. I think in 2020 or 2021, like during COVID, there were many protests happening. And so like right after, like a moment after, like her post was taken down, but was... And at the same time, like some like human rights lawyer approached her, and because they said, okay, let's see if we can do something, because what you said is very, it can really be dangerous and it's very unforgivable considering the context. And after a moment, they said, look, it's very difficult to kind of find a solution. So the best way is that you don't show up to the court. And after that, like at the same time again, the police came to her apartment, like confiscated all the the objects, and she got this arrest warrant that that lasted 30 years. And that's actually these documents that she had to use to it's 20 years still. But it's this document that she kind of had to always bring with her all the time, because that's also how she managed to kind of ask for a political refugee status, because that's really like it's really written on an A4 paper, and it's, you know, you see the date, I think like you are arrested until like 2045, and no, like, yeah, you cannot argument that. So yeah,
okay, so those are those cars were the police cars that were waiting for her if she were there. And so, but because she's a ghost, she's able to actually go back and kind of revisit her pets. There's like three or four, maybe even more cats that are there, lots of cats, but they're all like interacting with her and they're purring. And then she's having this kind of cozy moment with them where she's able to return home. And so, yeah, I'm just curious if she's had a chance to see the piece and, you know, what, if it brought up anything for her as this kind of imaginal reconnection to her homeland and her home.
Yeah, that's actually when her as a person become very, you know, always surprising, because I'm not sure if she, like, she always avoided to see like the final version, but I think she already saw like a build with most of the element in place, including her voice and her bedroom. And surprisingly enough, I guess for every person, like when she watched it, and you know, we watched it together, like she was in my living room and she watched it, like she just reacted to say, oh, it's so weird to hear my voice, you know. She, it was a very kind of a, almost deadpan in her reaction, no? But so I mean, let's say that her reaction was a bit, not emotion, like it didn't have like a dramatic peak, let's say. But what I can say, and this is kind of the part of the project that I take most of the pride, is that through the process, I also help her with the bureaucracy for all the paperwork concerning like the political refugee status and preparing her for the interview, because, you know, this interview with the refugee, let's say, institution are kind of tough. They can put you in like in a harsh place, and discourse wise. And so I really saw, like, and this really happened after the project, let's say, wrapped. Let's say that she basically slowly kind of get back, like she kind of slowly received the rights that she was kind of looking for. So she got the refugee status, and a few months later she got a job, and she could open a bank account, fast forward to 1 year later, she got the residency permit for 10 years, and, you know, she's now finding an apartment. So basically, like, if the film ends in a very suspended way, because it really encapsulated that moment in her life in which she was very, yeah, floating basically in between bureaucracy, between emotion, between like where to put your roots. But 1 year later, after the project finished, she basically, okay, she was becoming like a But you know, a citizen, no? A citizen with all the rights of a citizen. I think that's also, I mean, because I'm happy that I'm here at ITFA, because it's a documentary film festival, and I think documentary, you're dealing with reality, with the real, and there are projects that they kind of actively influence reality. Yeah.
Nice. And where did this project first premiere?
It was, last spring at New Images. So I was very happy to, in a way, have a premiere there because, I was not living in Paris back then. I was in Rome, so it was also a way to get back to Paris, but also show, again, having this kind of meta aspect of the fact that you are starting, you're watching the experience in Paris, and then you kind of roam, go back to Thailand. I think that element kind of, for me, was very interesting to kind of play with, and it was also a chance to kind of show it to more people, like within my network. And also, like, then I had a very calm summer, but kind of picked up, let's say, kind of late bloom in autumn, because it went to Art VR Festival in Prague at the beginning of October, Doc Leipzig, and now it's at Verzio Human Rights Festival in Budapest, and also in Brazil in a queer film festival, and now ITFA, and in a couple of weeks it will be at Bogo Shorts in Bogota. So again, it's kind of finding also like an international audience, which, you know, to be a student project, this is great.
Great. And so what's next for you? What do you have coming up?
Well, I mean, this was this is a sort of question, like, related to VR, of course, that was kind of important for me in this kind of festival circuits, because I knew that, okay, on one hand, it will be presenting the project, but also I will probably, like, encounter many people who will ask me, okay, this is your first VR project. Will you do it again? Unfortunately, I don't have, like, a fully binary answer. Yes, I will do it. No, I will not do it. Let's say that I was very happy with the experience. I'm still very attached to cinema, and now I'm working on two films, one short film and one feature film, which, again, the workload is already quite demanding. But at the same time, I feel like maybe we didn't talk about the technique of the film, but I really had to learn to use the software. Unity and part of the level design was also, I also did it, and particularly like the pacing. The pacing is a very important element of the work, and for me, because I always edit my own film, I had to be able to transpose the same, let's say, working experience also in a VR work. So let's say that with this kind of internship, I really learned a lot about it, and I'm very curious about the possibility of not necessarily like a single player VR, but really be more creative with the medium itself. So maybe something more collective, or something more kind of spread out, because, you know, there are also other work that use VR chat or, yeah, multiplayers, and I don't know. I feel like there's room to kind of bring back, let's say, the collective experience that cinema can offer, for example.
Yeah, for sure. And there have been, like, different places that have been showing these kind of virtual immersive expeditions with Excurio's technology that allows a group of people to kind of go through an experience together and walk through the space, and kind of like you would take a guided tour. Similarly, you're kind of taking a guided tour, and they're able to get enough people in where it's a technique that works, that has proven to be profitable enough to kind of create more of a shared group experience where everybody's where you're able to see where people are able to have a lot more to be able to have a room scale experience together in a way that they're able to see everything. So. Yeah, so I think that there's new emerging forms that are coming out there, but not all pieces are geared to be able to do that, since there's those pieces tend to try to do physical locomotion, but, you know, doing virtual locomotion in those different types of settings doesn't always work as well. And I think in a piece like yours, I mean, you could have people walking through, but I think it works for me a little bit better just to kind of have a cinematic experience of it, where because there's quite a lot of spaces that I'm traveling through, and then at some point there's a lack of a correlation between actually moving through a space. So yeah, I think there's different like things like what I see with what Cosm and the Sphere are doing, where it's like more of a dome experiences. So there's things that do have that, but yeah, I think it's still kind of emerging to see what distribution mechanisms are going to work for that, but also what content of the experiences are going to really fit that format. So yeah, I don't know if you have any other reflections or thoughts.
Yeah. No, maybe I can talk about one of, let's say, what could another kind of very powerful experience that I had with VR that could eventually be a theoretical, let's say, level up of what I'm doing is Traversing the Mist. So by a Taiwanese collective, I don't remember the
His name's Yen. I forget his last name, but yeah.
But I think it was again, it's a very spatial work because you're basically embodying these people that roam in a gay sauna, and again, basically, you walk around, and it's kind of a the level design also, and how things unfold. It's kind of built up in a smart way because, you know, in a, I think, 5 by 5 meters layout, you're basically kind of keep moving and kind of keep, let's say, also changing floor and extending the... So that's a very interesting possibility, but at the same time, you know, I think you need a different infrastructure, different budgets, and yeah, like, and all this kind of adds up to the point that, okay, how does it integrate to my life that, you know, has already this kind of a long project developing, you know, as a, you know, film, feature film, documentary, and so, but I'm not sure if I answered your question.
Oh, no, it was just more, no, that's fine. Just a quick follow-on. Have you had a chance to see Traversing the Mist?
Yeah. I mean, I watched it. I watched it in Cannes in 2024 because it was the first year that they organized, let's say, a proper VR section, and it was one of the shown work. And no. I completely enjoyed it because I don't know. For me, it was again, it was one of the first experiences that I kind of went through, and it was very interesting to see. Just the switch, like how mentally, let's say, as a viewer, you switch from, let's say, stationary 360 VR, which, you know, you're in a seat and you turn yourself around and you see this video that is kind of unrelated to your body in a way, like in just one axis of how your body moves. But suddenly, here, you're first-person perspective, you're walking and, you know... Everything is very, again, for a lack of a better word, it's immersive, but in the most kind of full-scale sense, because, you know, you are moving your... And for me, this is still very amazing of a VR headset, like of a real-time, let's say, PC VR setting, is that how, like, this kind of gyroscope, like how sensible it is, this headset to your movement, that it kind of sometimes there is no lag, like you kind of step down and it really, in term of eyesight, height and so on, it's like it works very, it tricks your brain very well. And I think Traversing the Mist, again, like use this kind of technology to very simply like show you a sauna and all the history behind, and also again like a personal story of the characters and so on. Plus, it's collective, so it's also create this kind of sort of tension between other bodies that you can, I'm sure you can have in a sauna, but again, they are kind of reproducing it in a, as the experience, not only visual experience.
Yeah, I had a chance to see each one of those three pieces of the trilogy and talk to Yen about them. So yeah, they're really great. Together as they are kind of pushing the edge of the technology for where it was at each moment that he made them. So great. I guess as we start to wrap up, I'd love to hear what you think the ultimate potential of immersive art, immersive storytelling might be, and what it might be able to enable.
Oh, wow. That's a tough one. I wonder how the other replies, but let's say I don't have a evangelist reply, like it will solve people's problem. It will, but it, I think in what I can say from my perspective, from my process, like I really approach the medium as a medium of empathy, a way to see, to embody the other's point of view. And again, because we are so submerged by constant content, which I guess, judging by how the world is unfolding, I don't think it kind of builds up our sense of empathy or a sense of comprehension or just sense of openness. So let's say, rather than how it will go, because again, we all know that, VR technology, VR headset is owned by big technological groups, like not only Meta but also ByteDance and HTC, which is probably owned by another parent company, but anyway, they're controlling the two, well, also Apple. But so what I wish to see is that there are more and more projects, storytelling and more specific content that really, in a way, a bit like documentary, no? Like kind of expand this kind of notion of understanding the others, creating this kind of sympathetic and bridge towards other perspective, and but in a much more visceral way.
Right. And is there anything else left unsaid that you'd like to share with the rest of the immersive community? Any final thoughts?
No, Will. I have to thank Kent, and also Voices of VR, because again, for a young, filmmaker or VR artist, it's actually, and again, this is also another, unsolved problem of VR. So this is distribution. It's very difficult to access to VR works. Like you either, in 2022, 2023, when I started to conceive the work, I could either go to, Venice, or to New Images, or to other festival to have a couple of two, three festivals, maybe in the US, and then to have just a showcase of what was produced in a year, no? Which, again, with cinema, of course, you can use platforms such as Mubi, but you can also download, and maybe once you're starting to be in a filmmaker's community, they can send you the link. So whatever your field of interest in film or research topic, you know, there are probably like some kind of hidden gems of the 80s, of the past, that was done and it sent it to you. But VR was very, I was completely blind, which was great also because it was very liberating. No, it's like, okay, you can do whatever you want. No, and so Voices of VR, through its kind of, purely like being a podcast, so hearing only the voice and not seeing or not living through the experience itself, also allow me to, again, understanding all these kind of tools by the maker's perspective, and also, probably what kind of emotion it triggered. So, keep listening and keep watching the, how it evolves, because I guess it's evolving every year. And yeah, I'm curious. I'm very, very curious to see how it evolves, especially, you know, I think there are at least one or two very interesting articles per month coming out from the international press that really kind of, it shows that application using VR for maybe therapeutic areas, for hospitals, also it has been used in prisons. So I think if we consider it not only as a, as entertainment, but as a tool, overarching tool, I'm sure there will be many, many interesting applications. Also very dystopic, but I guess that's happened with everything technological has this kind of always ambivalency. But let's hope that, more and more people do it for the good.
Yeah, I'm going to be... thank you for that. And I just had a few quick thoughts on that. Avinash Chenga is going to be giving a presentation on his efforts to try to archive some of these different pieces, because I think that, you know, with digital art, you know, things can disappear. It's so ephemeral, and that with the lack of distribution on top of the lack of easy to preserve, then it's ends up being like these ephemeral theatrical performances of sorts where either you were there to see it or you don't get to see it. So... yeah, for me, it's always been the most compelling of projects and works to see. And then my process has been to try to see as much as I can, and then to kind of store it in my own body and my own memories. And then through the conversations with the artist, have them describe their, like, their four braids of who they are, their story, the story of what they're trying to tell, the process by which they're telling it, but also, you know, kind of also share some of my own impressions and ways that I'm making sense of what they're doing. And so, it's a process that for me ends up being a very lightweight way to see everything and then talk to people. So, so it's been a real pleasure to be able to travel around the world and see all the things and talk to all the people, as it were. And I really appreciate, you know, the type of kind of, you know, it's like a walking tour, or you're going through this kind of wandering. It's guided, it's on rails, but there's something compelling around this walking through the space and hearing the story in this way of getting to learn about the main character of a piece through these kind of memories and audio reflections, and but also this journey back into their home that's in this kind of dream logic that kind of seamlessly transitions into it. So yeah, I thought it like worked really well, and just really appreciated all the ways that you're kind of bringing in all these different references and your deep insight into the medium. So yeah, thanks again for joining me here on the podcast, Domenico, to help break it all down.
Thank you very much to you, Ken, for this very interesting and enjoyful interview, and thank you very much for the audience and the future audience.
That's all that we have for today, and I just wanted to thank you for listening to the Voices of VR podcast. If you enjoyed the podcast, then please do spread the word, tell your friends, and consider becoming a member of the Patreon. This is a listener-supported podcast, so I do rely upon donations from people like yourself in order to continue to bring this coverage. You can become a member and donate today at patreon.com/voicesofvr. Thanks for listening.